Yeah, it's time to parlay, time to win a little money. Deegan and Juice with Kylan and Stucky. I know you got a chalk, but it's time for the teaser. This is how we do it when it's football season. Hey, Kylan and Stucky, yeah. Hey, Kylan and Stucky, whoop.
What's up, Degenerate Nation? Welcome to Degen and Juice, episode 33. I'm Stucky, and with me, as always, is Colin Wilson, probably coming to us in a better mood than last podcast after that big Arkansas win last night. What's going on, Colin?
Just enjoying the last day of February because every step closer gets us closer to college football season.
I can't believe that's what you said, but I'll get to that in a second. We're also joined by our first recurring guest, our first returning guest, I believe.
Wow.
So it's many of you know him as Sports Cheetah or Preston Johnson. He'll be joining us for the duration of the podcast. Have a number of topics across a wide variety of sports. What's going on, Cheetah?
Nothing at all. Just excited to talk a little bit of college football with Colin.
Yeah.
see, I was going to go into this whole intro how by the time everyone's listening to this, it'll be March 1st. Yep. And to me, March is my favorite month. Now, I don't necessarily think it's the best sports month just because of the lack of variety. But, you know, it's nostalgic for me, always taking off school those first two tourney days. So let me ask you a question. I know pretty much the time frame where you guys are going to go. I'm assuming it's going to involve college football. But you commit a crime and you get locked in solitary confinement. But you're allowed to come out for 1 month out of the year and you can watch as many sports and bet on as many sports as you want. But you're locked up for the other 11 months. What month are you choosing? Preston, I'll start with you.
Yeah, mine might be similar then to Colin's. My main sports are football and basketball. So for me, I think it would be sometime in December if I didn't have to pick a month and I could pick like 30 days, maybe it'd be middle of December to the middle of January, at least get the college football national championship game in there and some NFL playoff games. But with NBA going strong there, plus college hoops, I think that's probably my favorite month. You have the holidays and stuff in there too. So, you know, you don't have to do as much. You're hanging out with family and friends. And I think that's my choice for the top, I guess, 30 day duration would be mid December to mid January.
But if I make you choose a month, are you choosing December? Okay.
Yeah, it'll be December.
Colin, yeah, and I think that, well, no, I don't, because that kind of shows a little bit of the small sliver of difference between Cheetah and I and where our passions are, because where college basketball and the NBA really is kind of at the bottom of the power sports for me, baseball, like MLB, is a huge thing in my life. So that's, you know, in October is by far my favorite month because you have NFL, you have college football, you have NHL's in full swing, MLB is going through the playoffs and the World Series. So for me, it's not quite yet bowl season, but you know, we're in full swing of college football, but October from the 1st to the 31st is my favorite.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I wouldn't say NHL's in full swing, but NBA and NHL both start in October, but yeah, you have both footballs and baseball playoffs, so you can have some pretty epic days in October. I don't know. I mean, I was thinking October, but I couldn't sit in solitary confinement knowing that I'm missing March Madness. Like, I don't think I could do it. So I think that I think the best sports month is probably, you know, in the winter, but I think I might have to choose March if you're, you know, giving me the option.
I think the bigger argument really is what is the worst sporting month? And that'd be like between August and February. Like, which one would, if you really had to go to prison and you were forced to watch sports one of those months, which one would you pick? Assuming you threw out the Super Bowl for February.
You mean like you're not allowed to watch sports for a month? I mean, I wouldn't.
No, February. No, you're in prison, so you have to watch one of these shitty months. Which one would you pick?
The shittiest month I would say is probably August.
Yeah.
Gotta be. Dog days of August. But anyway, so college basketball, we have a couple conference tournaments that have started tomorrow. And, you know, when everyone is listening to this on Thursday, we'll have our first daytime action, which feels fitting because it's the first day of March. So we have Big Ten Degeneracy at noon. And then we have, I think there's some Big South. Longwood, I feel like, always plays during the day. So I'll start with the Big Ten conference tournament since that does start tomorrow, and we'll actually it starts tonight, but we'll I want to see if you guys have any, you know, sleepers that you're looking at, and then if there's any other major or power conference tournaments where you're eyeing a certain future, curious to get your thoughts there. I'll start and just say that the Big Ten feels wide open to me. I mean, if Purdue or Michigan State gets knocked down, you know, it's not really a deep conference. So I was looking for a potential, you know, long shot in the middle tier. Nebraska kind of caught my eye. I might take a flyer there. Cheetah, I'll start with you. What are you seeing in the Big Ten or any other major conference that you're looking at?
Yeah, even just a few days ago, and it's different now, but Purdue was, I think they were the third favorite. You can get as high as 4-1 on them. So that's gone, and that was probably the best bet if you were doing a future for the Big Ten Conference Tournament. At this point, for me, I would be in that same area as you. I think, obviously, Michigan and Ohio State have a chance, but if you're going for like a really deeper long shot, after Nebraska and Penn State, for me, I would be shocked if any of the other teams won the conference tournament. I just don't think they're anywhere close to be good enough. So for me, it would be, you know, Nebraska in the 24-1 range, Penn State 27-1. And Penn State may be a better pick. I think their draw sets up where they probably are going to get Ohio State. I think if they went out where they've obviously beaten twice, and they just play such a high variance type of game where they shoot a lot of threes themselves. And if they get hot, you know, they can easily win 3 or 4 games in a Big Ten tournament setting. So that's probably my pick, Penn State, but Nebraska, I think, is right there too.
Yeah, I think there's some really good value in Penn State. And for me, I'll be happy when I don't have to bet on Wisconsin anymore, because it seems like I can't figure them out and I always lose bets on them. And then Michigan, I keep fading them and they keep winning games. I think the one thing I'm going to do with the Big Ten is live betting Michigan State seems to be like the most fun thing to do the last 3 weeks, because they get these humongous deficits in these games. Even against Wisconsin the other day, I think with 6 minutes left, you could live bet them down to, I think they were +130 at one point, and then all of a sudden just, you know, drain a couple threes and just completely take over the game. Just live betting Michigan State in second halves alone has been a hell of a fun ride the last 3 weeks for me, and I'm going to continue to do it through this tournament.
Yeah, it's interesting that it feels like the conference tournaments this year and the power conferences are more wide open than they've been in a while. Now, I think the ACC is the lone exception, because, you know, the top four get a double bye into the quarters, and it's a very top-heavy conference. I think they had 3 teams in the top 5 RPI like a week ago and 4 in the top 10. But, I mean, even in the Big 12, the SEC, I think that there's – some good opportunities to take, you know, a Nebraska type of long shot. Any that you're eyeing, either Cheetah or Colin?
For the ACC?
Yeah, just any of the other power conferences.
I was going to go Middle Tennessee, but that's, I mean, UNC's 1-6 straight. They're pretty hot right now.
Well, except for last night.
But they lost.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Sorry, I didn't update that. Yeah, they lost last night. But I think that's the tricky part of betting some of these power conferences right now, is if you've got your seeding in place, you know, if you've already got an automatic first or, you know, two game bye going in, like, what's the point of playing and what's the point of putting in the effort? Like, I thought Texas Tech should have sat a whole bunch of people against West Virginia the other day because of so many injuries that they've got. You know, why not get healthy right now when you're pretty much guaranteed your buys already? So these games leading up to the tournament, I think the point is they're a little bit tricky right now to cap.
Yeah, some teams care more than others. Go ahead, Cheetah. Do you have any thoughts on any of the other power conferences?
Yeah, I like one in the SEC quite a bit. I've bet them a few times in a row and been pretty correct. So Frank Martin, I think it was before their road Tennessee game, after they lost by 24 at home to Florida, they lost a big one. I think they lost by almost 20 at Arkansas, lost by almost 20 at A&M. Like, they just were falling apart. And Frank Martin called his team out, and they went into Tennessee. They ended up losing the game by 3, but they played really well. And then they were getting a ton of points at home to Auburn. And so I backed them there, and they won that game outright. They were laying a really short number, I thought, against Georgia. They covered that game. They won by 9. And then they went in, they covered a Mississippi State in overtime. They blew a lead late, but they still played Mississippi State really tough on the road. So it's a team, and they're playing again today against LSU, and they still have to play Auburn, but they're 50-1 you know, to win the SEC tournament at BetOnline right now. I think they're one of the only spots that has the SEC up already. And that's one where I think they're on par with teams – Yeah, like Alabama, Florida, Missouri, A&M, they're all like 8-1, 16-1. LSU's 25-1. South Carolina at 50. Frank Martin, the defense, I know they don't score nearly as well, and they're not as good as some of these other teams, but they could make a run, I think, in this SEC tournament. Wouldn't shock me at all. And at that price, I think they should be priced somewhere in that 16-20 range instead of 50. So that's probably my favorite play on the current futures conference tournament board.
Yeah, that's a good point. I mean, the South Carolina's, I mean, they're going to rebound, and they're shooting well recently from deep. So if they can keep that up, I mean, yeah, I think the SEC is pretty wide open. Before we move on from college basketball, let's kind of cross off overall futures for the NCAA tournament. So I was just looking at the updated national championship futures, and two teams really jump out at me. Curious to get your thoughts, Cheetah, then you as well, Colin. I mean, Texas Tech, if you look at five dimes, I think they're sitting at 66-1, which I think is outrageous because that team, when healthy, I think is a top 10 team in the country, which I think they've clearly showed. And they're, you know, almost getting to the point where they're fully healthy. And then a team like Tennessee, I mean, I don't think they should be 90-1. They have too much talent and inside games. So I think that those two teams just jump out at me right away. I'm already invested in St. Mary's from preseason, so I'm biased with them. I don't really trust them as much as the other two, but those two seem pretty high. I'll start with you, Cheetah. Do you have any updated feel or thoughts on those or others in the national championship future market?
Sure. I'd have to pull up. I'll just do it real quick while I'm talking here. I didn't know, and I wouldn't know why Tennessee dropped that much, because they were some of the best prices on Tennessee just a week ago were like 50-1. And a lot of them were 40-1. I guess they lost to Georgia, but they beat Florida. They beat Mississippi. They beat Mississippi State. Yeah, I don't know why you get 91. Maybe I just missed it at five dimes earlier when I was looking. I thought it was just last week. So I actually like the Tennessee one quite a bit at 90, coached really well, and they have talent to hang. And they've played a really tough schedule themselves. So actually, I think that's a great one. And I really dislike Texas Tech. So I've been giving them a lot of grief and harping on them a lot. And a lot of it's the injury stuff. But they really, so they're like third or fourth in defensive efficiency right now. Mm-hmm. But they've the entire season have been outside the top, I think, 70 or 80 in offensive efficiency. And what I've basically said about them, if you watch them play, actually, I put people on the spot. I say, you know, Keenan Evans is like their guy. He averages 17 or 18 points a game. He leads the team in assists with 3 a game, and the next best guys are averaging 1.5 a game. There's 2 of those. So what I preface it with is they're a team that on offense, I think, has zero scheming. All they play is isolation ball, and Keenan Evans bails them out way too often, late in shot clocks, taking tough shots, and that's because he's so good. He's maybe, I think, as far as his value to his team, top 5 player in the country for his value to Texas Tech. And sure enough, we've seen it since he got injured. Lose 2. He didn't even play the other night with Justin Gray as well out, Zach Smith out, and they got crushed from the get-go. It was like 28-3, and they did make a little run back at West Virginia, but they really had no shot ultimately to win the game. If he's playing somewhat healthy, I think that's still a pretty big hit to them because he's not going to be able to bail them out as often. Their defense is really good, but they come up against a team that can score against them and score. They're not going to be able to keep up. They don't scheme well enough offensively. So I actually think they're a team that I think it's bad luck mostly because if they're healthy, their defense is good enough to keep them in a lot of games. But now without maybe Gray or Smith or Evans playing hurt, it's just going to be a huge question mark, and they're not one I would look. Even at 66-1, I probably would be passing.
Yeah, fair enough. They're 51st in offensive efficiency, and if they, you know, if they're playing isolation ball against a team that ranks in the top 10 of, you know, defensive efficiency, then that's going to be hard for them if they can't create any of their own shot. But stuck to your point, I mean, Tennessee and Texas Tech are both in the top 5 in defensive efficiency. So I think I was reading some stats about prior national championship teams and teams that have made the Final Four and what their, you know, offensive and defensive efficiencies have been, and nobody outside of, I think, lower than 39th. Has ever won the national championship. So that would count out teams on that'd be on the defensive end. So that would count out teams this year like North Carolina that ranks 58th, Kansas that ranks 42nd. You know, Wichita is way outside of that. You know, St. Mary's is 100th. So you know, I kind of look at some of those stats to base on who I think is going to make it far in the tournament.
So the two questions that I had for you on this topic, Colin, were one, what's Texas Tech grade out in the green zone? But in all seriousness, what Arkansas at 200-1? It's not a joke. I usually joke about Arkansas sports on here. Yeah. But I mean, the team has talent. They can can they win 2 to 3 games and get you to a point where you can hedge?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm okay. So I am an SEC homer, and of course, you know, I'm an Arkansas homer. But we have 7 seniors. We have 3 senior guards. We have a big man freshman that is dominating right now. We are winning games on the road. My problem is now the defensive efficiency was around the 120s. And then somewhere around 3 weeks ago, we decided to turn it up. And I think we're all the way up in somewhere in the 80s range right now as far as our defensive efficiency goes. But my problem is I don't know what happened with Kentucky. I don't know if it was exhaustion or if it was just they hit a wall, it seems like. They were able to pick up at Alabama. They looked just fine last night. But they can do some damage. And what is the quality of the SEC this year? I mean, I can remember years past the SEC only getting 4 teams into the tournament and it being dogged as a basketball conference compared to its football. But we may get 8 teams in this year, and I think our strength of record outside of the conference is pretty strong. And Arkansas is definitely one of the teams I would want to back just because of they beat Seton Hall last year. They took UNC to the brink in the round of 32. There's enough experience and there's enough of everything here. They just fit the perfect profile for somebody that can make a run.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really argue with you. I mean, they're so hard to figure out, though, but they're actually playing more consistent ball lately. I mean, what they've lost since they lost at LSU, their only losses at home against Kentucky, who is one of the hardest teams in the country to figure out.
I'm really interested in our draw as far as regional, because 2 of the regionals are Wichita and Dallas, and we can fill those. Those are both within – those are 4-hour drives, so we can fill in those venues pretty quick.
Was it North Carolina 2 years ago where you guys, I mean, you should have won that game. You absolutely choked late. But was that 2 seasons ago when North Carolina ended up losing? Or was that just last year?
That was last year, I think.
I would like to preface this. North Carolina has knocked us out 6 times in the last 18 years. That's how often we play. Jeez. That's how often we play North Carolina in the tournament. But, yeah, no, it was last year. I believe Barford was called for a charge that should not have been a charge. He was fouled pretty hard. We had them up by 2 with a minute left.
I mean, you were up 18, 16, 14, like most of the second half.
That's right.
Anyways, I was just going to say, you obviously can show that you can hang with anyone. They ended up winning it all, meaning North Carolina. So anyway, that's not a bad option either. Actually, I'm liking that.
And we should, I trade this with Cheetah, because Cheetah and I actually participate in this NCAA auction, which is a great idea. If you have a group of friends, I guess we could get into this now, but if you have a group of friends that all love college basketball, instead of just filling out a bracket and having some sort of points assigned to it, what Cheetah and I do, we've been a part of this for years, is we actually auction the teams off. So there's a bidding amount and you go through all of the teams in it, and you could be bluffing, you could be raising the price on somebody, but at the same time, you've got to be able to keep an eye on how much is in the pot so that you can see, you know, how much a win brings you back a certain percentage of the pot. And so what you're betting on is you're auctioning on a team to make it all the way. And if they run it all the way, you get, you know, a pretty good percentage of the pot. So as I sit here and I share, you know, what I think about Arkansas and what I think about some of these other teams, I'm listening to Cheetah really carefully so I know how to jack them up on the auction prices.
Do you guys do a Calcutta style pool?
Yeah, it's basically a Calcutta. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, cool. Okay, so yeah, and everyone enjoy the college basketball conference tournaments and the tournament coming up, because I know everyone will except for Colin, who will be studying college football metrics, but that's neither here nor there. Let's get into, we do have Cheetah on the podcast, so that means we have to talk some NBA. There's a lot of hot topics going around, a lot with the gambling industry. And I know that if that becomes legal and the revenue and that the cap implications for the NBA, it could be really bad in my opinion. But one topic that we wanted to cover today was NBA tanking. So I believe, and excuse my lack of knowledge on talking about the NBA, but I'm going to try. I believe Mark Cuban came out and said they're basically tanking and got fined. Curious to get your thoughts on that, but then also curious to get your thoughts from a betting strategy perspective on, you know, how to bet teams that are tanking. Do you have any thoughts there?
Yes, I think the Mark Cuban story, to be fair, I actually haven't like looked at the details specifically, but I believe he mentioned that they had a conversation within the front office or with the team. Maybe at some point tanking came up and he mentioned that it came up. He didn't even say that he actually told them to tank, but it just came up in some form, and he mentioned that on an interview, and then the league decided that you know was against what they wanted and fined him for $600,000, which I know he's rich. That's like, it was one of the biggest fines, if not the biggest one in the history of basketball. So it was pretty incredible. But regardless, I think the setup coming into the All-Star game, there were eight teams that had are coming out of the All-Star break. There are eight teams that had 18 wins to 20 wins. So there was a bunch right there. And this is the last season that the draft lottery will be the same. So what they've had in the previous years is that the top pick has the biggest chance of getting the first pick, meaning the worst team where you're slotted at number one, you know, second slot has the second best chance of getting the number one pick and so on. Well, now they're trying to, I guess, not entice those teams to tank as hard going forward. Teams in like the top five all have the same percentage, and six and seven are actually all pretty close too. And really, if you're in that bottom seven, you have a similar, it's a little bit different, but like you have like a 10% chance still if you're at sixth or fifth or seventh, I think is in that range of getting the first pick. So it doesn't sway a ton. And so this is the last year, and plus the draft's pretty loaded at the top of the draft. So your first couple picks are going to be really guys that we can at least anticipate will make a big difference and be impactful in the NBA. So you have the tankathon in these last 20 to 24 games for these teams who are all right there at the bottom, close to each other. All know that the lottery really is going to change going forward. This is the last year where getting the worst record in the league or second worst is a big difference versus the third or fourth worst. And they know who's at the top as far as prospects go. So, I mean, I started doing it even before the All-Star break. You saw some weirdness. The Mavs were one of the teams, which is why I think that team thought and the league ultimately thought there was something going on there. But the Suns were another one where they were in a game tied against the Lakers in the middle of the fourth quarter, and then they didn't make a shot for the next 6:20. And they also missed six free throws out of six. I mean, that's hard to do on accident. So the next game, they host San Antonio to start the game, and they didn't score for the first 6 minutes of the game, and they literally had 0 points.
They didn't score for a whole quarter.
Yeah, it was a 12.5-minute stretch through the two games. They had 0 points.
That's impressive.
So that one, I was like, okay. And that came right after the game before those two. Actually, I forgot to mention, they played the Charlotte Hornets at home, up either 21 or 22 in the third quarter, lost by double digits. So they gave up like 34 or 35-point swing in a quarter and a half. So they're a team that was pretty much on my radar right then that they were tanking. And so what I've done is mostly just waiting for spots against the Hawks, the Kings. I did it when the Kings were playing. I think it was Portland just the other night or the night before. I posted it.
Last night there was the Rip City was minus 750 to the Kings, and I said that's the greatest price ever.
They played the other night. Portland played someone. Maybe it was Phoenix, I think, actually. It was the Suns. So we'll talk about them. They were down 10 going into the fourth, and it was plus 7.5. So Portland was laying 2.5 in the fourth quarter. And money line, people were getting like plus 375 to plus 300 range. I had just posted that I bet plus 7.5, but a lot of people were like, oh, I grabbed money line. It was nice. And they won, you know, at the end, Lillard hit a shot to win it. And I think the way that it happened, Phoenix in a tie game earlier with a couple possessions left, didn't inbound the ball. Like if they just took a 5 second violation, it got a little strange, you know, a little tankish. So there's some of these teams I mentioned, the Hawks, you have the Kings in there, the Mavs, obviously. And then you have other teams that are borderline. I think the Nets, I'd have to pull up the NBA standings. I'm forgetting one or two.
I'm looking at them. There's five teams with 18 wins.
Oh, the Magic too. Yeah. And the Bulls are in there. Oh, yeah. The Grizzlies, who play tonight against, I think it's the Suns. Anyway, it's just an incredible situation. So what I've done is I'm not really betting the games before because I'm not sure, you know, teams aren't going to come out and at least try. And these young guys that are getting more run late in the year, they're playing for jobs and spots on rosters and stuff. But later in these games, for whatever reason, you know, these teams are finding ways to lose, I think, more often than what would normally be the case. So I'm just looking in spots like middle of the third quarter to the, you know, start of the fourth quarter where we can back a team playing for a playoff spot like the Portland Trail Blazers or, say, the Timberwolves was won the other night against the Bulls. It was tied in the middle of the third quarter. They ended up winning by like 27. And I missed that one, actually. I usually like to wait till later in the third quarter or the fourth. The T-Wolves, I think, were down one or two in the middle of the third, and then like a 30-point run after that, and I just missed out on that one. But those are ones to watch out for. So that's something I've been doing now since a couple of days before the All-Star break and since we started to get back again this last week. And I think I've only I haven't lost one yet, and the only one I considered betting the other night was actually Dallas was, I think they were +3 to the Pacers, and it felt like Dallas, because of that stuff with Cuban, wasn't going to be a team that's going to be tanking for at least a while. Like, they have to win a couple now to make the league feel better, and then they can tank in like 2 weeks. So I didn't do that one. I stayed away, but it was tied going into the fourth, and I was like, oh man, Pacers are supposed to win this game. And I stayed away, and Dallas actually won. So Dallas is a team to maybe be a little bit cautious with for another couple weeks, maybe they get another one or two wins, and then they'll probably find a way to lose 15 in a row.
Well, they, so, got the Thunder tonight, so.
There you go.
Yeah, that could get ugly. So I'm just thinking out loud here. What would – have you seen this, or do you have any thoughts on if two potential tanking teams played each other? Is there a play there? Is it a second half under, or, like, are they – no one's trying to make shots or win, or are they playing no defense, or is it just too hard to figure that out?
Yeah, I think that's the spot where – and a lot of my day-to-day betting post-All-Star break – it has completely vanished like for the last three seasons. And a lot of it is because the tank has just gotten way, way worse. Plus the resting players, extra variables on who's going to play, who's going to not play from night to night. But this is when you have two teams playing against each other that are supposedly tanking, right? Or they need to lose the game. It's really, unless you have some inside information. I mean, a great example tonight would be Memphis and Phoenix. Memphis bet from like 1.5 to 2, 2.5 today. They probably are the slightly better team, plus they're at home. It's probably a little bit of an edge on Memphis, but I mean, ultimately, yeah, our team's going to try to score points because, or they're going to try to miss on purpose, or the defense is just going to kind of give up layups and open threes all game. It's hard to really know, so you can't really just blindly bet overs or blindly bet unders one way or the other.
That's a fascinating game because the Grizz are 5-23 at home this year. That's
wow. So they're way better. They've been way better on the road. I didn't even realize it was that much of a swing.
Sorry, that's wild.
I didn't know that either.
They've lost 10 in a row too. So that Suns Grizz game, I might have to actually find that on the
flip team. It on and look. That's one thing where it's like, when if one team's up 10, like bet the other way because they'll somehow find a way to make it close again, and then one team will pull away, right? And then when it's back to 8 or 10, just bet the other side because eventually it's going to come down to the last possession or two of who wants it less. And so having plus like sixes on every side for a while is probably going to pay off.
Yeah, that's a good point. And before we transition off of NBA, this is some really good stuff. But let me just get your updated. Give me who's winning the West against two and how many games. I'm curious to see if you think that the Rockets are legit, and who's winning the East and in how many games. We can save your champion, who I assume it's going to be the Warriors for later, but just who do you think in those two conference championships?
Sure. I'm pretty certain on both of these. So I'll start with the East. I think the Cavs are going to ultimately get it. I also have a bunch of money on them now at like +200 and +180 after their trade. So I'm rooting for them, but I still think they're the best team and they have the best player who really takes it easy all season, regular season, and has another gear, which he'll be able to hit come playoff time. And that's LeBron James. And I really am not going to really bank on Toronto, doing anything. They haven't yet. So if they do great, I mean, they might get it done and it could happen, but I'm not going to be picking them. And I think Boston's still the Gordon Hayward injury away from, you know, actually competing to win the East when it's all said and done. So I'll say, since Toronto will likely be home, I'll say Cavs in six. They'll finish it. They'll close it at home. And then for the West, which is ultimately the real NBA championship, because Houston, I think, is by far the second best team or first best team, if you look at some metrics so far in the entire league. And I'll say Golden State in seven. And probably the only difference being that they obviously getting home is big, but just the pressure of a game seven and playing in that spot, they have a lot more experience there than Houston does, which ultimately when you're shooting a bunch of threes might not matter. You know, Ryan Anderson could hit six threes in that game and then Houston ends up winning it. But I think there's something to be said to Chris Paul and James Harden always finding a way to choke in big games their whole life. It dates back to college for James Harden at Arizona State. And obviously when he got to the championship as an Oklahoma City Thunder, as his worst stretch ever last year against the Spurs. Everyone knows about Chris Paul, but Harden's been just as bad. And to rely on those two guys, I'm just not similar to Toronto. I'm not going to do it yet until I see it. But I think they're good enough to win a few games. And I'll just say it goes seven because they are the two best teams in the league this season.
So two follow-ups from that. Well, as of right now, the Rockets actually have home court advantage in the West, I think by a half game.
So they do. It'll come down to, it'll probably go down the stretch.
Yeah, so that'll be something that'll be really interesting race to watch. But in the East, one team that I'm just curious to get your thoughts on, because again, I don't really know much about the NBA. But once Wall comes back, is Washington not a legit threat in the East?
I think that's a really good question, because they've played so well without him, and everyone assumes John Wall is really, really great and an all-star, and he is. You know, he'd lead the league or be second in the league in assists for a couple seasons. They're 17-1 to win the East alone, which is a pretty good price. So I think outside of the rest of the teams that we didn't talk about, meaning Cleveland, Boston, and Toronto, Washington and the Sixers are probably the two biggest threats to any of those other teams, especially adding John Wall. Now, the thing I think where I don't know if they really make this unbelievable leap up is John Wall is really good because he needs the ball in his hands and he runs a lot of the offense and he creates shots for other people. Bradley Beal's reached this other level because he's had a lot more of, you know, handling the ball, being the pick and roll ball handler. His usage has just gone really high, and so he's played really well with it, but his usage is going to drop back up. He's going to be drop back off, I should say, and he'll turn into more of like a spot up shooter. And I'm not sure. So if, and by the way, this weird like metric, you know, guy who under the radar is Tomas Saransky, their backup, who's been playing point guard for him. Like the Wizards, when he's on the court, are like an 80th to 85th percentile like lineup or team, and when he's off, they're actually a negative or like slightly below average team. So he's actually been a really good replacement and is just an under the radar guy that isn't valued correctly yet, and he's one of the reasons they haven't really dropped off too. So when you're replacing Wall with him and Beal, who's a pretty good player, it actually has kind of just been the same Wizards team. And so when you plug Wall back in there, I'm not sure there's going to be a huge leap to where now they're a contender. And when it comes down to it, by the way, I mean, NBA Plus, and you know, Stucky, you watch a ton of the March Madness stuff, where coaching when you only have a day in between a game is massive, and prepping for the team and the X's and O's and scheming stuff. And Scott Brooks is just one of the worst of all time. He's really, really good at developing players. We saw that at Oklahoma City. You have guys like Otto Porter Jr. now, who blew up last year and this year. Kelly Oubre Jr. coming off the bench has been massive for Washington this year. But when it comes down to an actual game and stuff, like, he has no clue. And when you're playing in a playoff series, like last year, they probably should have beaten the Boston Celtics. Instead, they didn't. It went to seven. And, you know, he had Ian Mahimney out there guarding Kelly Olynyk. And you remember in game seven, Kelly Olynyk, I think, dropped 40 points on the Wizards because Ian Mahimney was trying to guard him 30 feet away. So stuff like that, he just has no clue. So I think the Wizards are a good pick. And I know I went on a long tangent rant there. But when it comes down to it, Scott Brooks, I think Scott Brooks is the difference. And the fact that, you know, coaching, I think, plays a big role in the actual series to series of an NBA playoff.
But in Scott Brooks's defense, he didn't have to draw up a play for years because Brody's just running his own thing, right? I mean, can you imagine drawing up a play for Westbrook and expect him to follow it?
Well, I think that's why a lot of people thought he'd be better in Washington, and they've been good because he has similar talent. They're in the Eastern Conference, like they're going to win 50 games, but he hasn't been tested until last year in the playoffs when it wasn't just Westbrook and Durant, right? And last year, I think he showed that he just doesn't really have it. And, you know, it is what it is. He's probably, again, a great player developer. But when it comes down to breaking things down and making the right decisions late in the game or prep and, you know, adjustments in between games, he doesn't have it.
Fair enough. That was some interesting stuff, especially the tank stuff. And I think that the NBA playoffs, with the way that the Rockets are playing, are going to be, you know, and all the question marks with the Cavs, are going to be a little more intriguing to the casual fan like myself, with that, you know, sure, that'll tune in for the conference championships and the NBA finals. I think there's a little more intrigue this year, which I think will, you know, makes it more interesting for myself at least. So now that we took care of some NBA content with Colin, I know we have to get to this. Just a 1 minute update on how did your, because I have no idea, how did your WWE predictions go?
Exactly as scripted. I mean, the guy that was supposed to win that I wrote about won.
Stay humble, bro.
Yeah, I mean, but I mean, he was also a minus 500 favorite. So who's going to pound their chest on that, right?
What
so
about those? I edited the piece. What about that girl that you thought that there could be, she could be throwing a match? Do you call it a match or whatever?
Yeah, she didn't win her match. So I was wrong there. I thought there would be some sort of sham run-in disqualification. And it actually turned out to be a clean pin. So Obviously, I've got more work to do getting on WWE creative team, you know, before I get into their little brain trust.
But you did well overall.
Yeah, I definitely made money on it. And, you know, get another pay-per-view in a couple of weeks and then the big one with WrestleMania. And so it's all degenerate betting.
All right. Fair enough. That's all I'll give you on WWE today. But before we sign off here, I did want to cover some college football, especially since we have Colin and Cheetah here. I think that there's a couple bets involving Arizona that you're both interested in. Colin, I'll start with you. And you're looking at Arizona from a pretty long shot future perspective. Is that right?
Right. Yeah. So how this came about the other night, and I mean, we've all know, at least the people that, you know, I talk to or I read about, you know, we all know that Sumlin going to Arizona was a pretty big deal. We, you know, we feel like he's his relationship with his quarterbacks, he makes them better than what they actually are. He's proved that with almost every quarterback he's had at A&M. He's turned these dual threats into putting up some pretty big stats. So I've always been comfortable with Sumlin and his quarterbacks. So when he was chosen to go to Arizona, I thought this is a huge deal. I already knew that Arizona's schedule was pretty favorable because they didn't have Stanford and they didn't have Washington, who would be the two leaders to win the Pac-12 North next year. They do get there's other things in the schedule that really worked out for them, and I had my eye on them, which is like Oregon comes in on back-to-back games. Arizona has a bye week in November, which is really good because college football players, like the teams that have byes in early November, they really seem to use that to get healthy, and they come out fresh and they finish up a good stretch. Their non-conference play was pretty much not as challenging as some other teams in Power Fives. They start off with BYU. They got to play Houston in a revenge game from last year. And they got Southern Utah. So that's kind of a joke. But, you know, I like their schedule. I like their coaching upgrades. And I knew that they returned almost every single tackler on their defense, as terrible as they are. I knew that they returned everybody on their defense. So with all that said, a national championship future is really pretty far out there, right? I mean, this is a team that's in the Pac-12 South, but when I started looking at the other teams, if you've listened to this podcast, you know how much I hate Arizona State and how much I hate what Herm Edwards is doing, because that's just a joke. Where they finish in recruiting is laughable. I'm not a Clay Helton fan. I've never been a Clay Helton fan. I was more a Sam Darnold and an even bigger Ronald Jones fan than I ever was of Clay Helton. And I think this may be a little eye-opening this year about seeing what he can do with all these new weapons around. UCLA is a little bit of a mystery to me right now, and mostly because the second-ranked dual-threat quarterback that Chip Kelly went out and recruited, he's not even going to be on campus until, I think, the end of July. So he's not going to be a part of spring practices. So you're going to see the monster kid, the one that played in the bowl, I think the Cactus Bowl. He did really well. He's talented. But I think it's this dual threat that Chip Kelly specifically wanted at UCLA. He's going to be the one that comes in and actually plays at some point and takes over at UCLA. So they're kind of a wild card. I don't know where they're at. I finally got all my win totals done. I got my power rankings done. And I noticed that everybody in the Pac-12 South was bunched up together really close. I mean, we're talking within like 5.5 points of PRs. Arizona has the most favorable schedule. They have the most favorable cross, you know, schedule. So it's not inconceivable that they can win the South, and it's not inconceivable that they can go with just one loss. So I've kind of had my eye on their futures, and they were definitely on my radar, you know, for Pac-12 futures, for Pac-12 South futures. And I'm going to let Cheetah talk about Khalil Tate and the Heisman odds, because I love Khalil Tate, and I think he absolutely could win the Heisman. My two problems with that are Tua and the fact that only one West Coast person seems to be sitting in New York. I can't remember the last time I've seen two people, you know, from West Coast football that has been invited to go to the Heisman or is even in Heisman talk at all. So, but I saw 500-1 out there in five dimes. Westgate is pulling 100-1 on Arizona right now, and BetOnline is 25-1 on Arizona. So I was blinking at this the other night, and I thought that's crazy, because whatever you put down on a 500-1, essentially I can fade Arizona every week of the season and make that money back. I mean, there is such a leeway with 500-1. I can fade Arizona, who I think is going to be overpriced in the market. I think by the time everybody realized the bookmakers put numbers out, the public gets a hold of these numbers, they fall in love with someone, they know about Khalil Tate, I think we're going to get some really – the prices we're going to get on Arizona, it's not going to be very good value for what they actually are. And so I think when I looked at this, I thought I'm going to be able to just fade them every week, take the other team with probably pretty good value on the other team and easily, you know, make a financial benefit on this future. But if they somehow, you know, turn out just one loss and win in the Pac-12 South and they make it to the Pac-12 championship game, we're talking about, I've got three games in a row of just massive money I can put on the other side and still make a huge profit on 500-1.
That's a good point. Before I go to Cheetah, a couple things that I wanted to follow up with you on that you said. I mean, in the regards to the West Coast bias, I mean, in the last 15 years, I mean, Reggie Bush technically didn't win it because it's vacated, but you had Carson Palmer, Matt Leiner, Reggie Bush, who am I forgetting? Mariota. So, you know, there's been four players from the, you know, West Coast, from the Pac-12 that have won a Heisman in the last 15 years. So I don't think that's a deterrent, but yeah, were you going
to
say something?
I think what I meant to say is the West Coast seems to hitch its wagons to one player. And right now the person that's at the top of the board is Bryce Love. So I'm not sure if there's room for two West Coast players to get enough votes, to get enough love.
Okay. And then I'll go to Cheetah on this and you can chime in after. One of the things I think you're going to talk about is the Khalil Tate Heisman futures. One of the things that I personally am curious about is you kind of see this with Trae Young, right? Like, he is a really good basketball player, but he's not as good as he was the first, you know, month or two when teams get tape on him and they figure out, okay, this is how we can cover him. You started to see some of that with Khalil Tate, you know, after, I mean, he had one of the best months of all time. Is in his second year, is it going to be more difficult for him? Or do you think that he's that good and there definitely is value in the Heisman? That's one of the things that I think about with Khalil Tate. So curious to get your thoughts there, Cheetah.
Yeah, that's, I think, why I actually ended up betting this a while back when they first posted Heisman numbers, is you saw teams making adjustments. I think it was against USC that they just said, like, good luck, and they put nine in the box. They had zero safeties, essentially, and played the corners one-on-one and said, try to beat us through the air. And even then, and Arizona went down pretty big, but they came back and tied the game in the fourth quarter and still scored 40-something just because they wear teams down enough running the football. Yep. But from that point on, the defenses did similar stuff against Arizona and Khalil Tate, and they did throw the ball a little bit more, and they did it in ways where he wasn't, you know, making deep throws that he really can't convert very often, but a lot of like little screen swing stuff that just spaced the field more or less, kind of like a basketball term, spacing the court, but they spaced it so where defenses couldn't just crowd the and box them to defend the run. And so the fact that he did start to make slight adjustments and the play calling was part of it. Now you're getting someone in there who is someone I know can call plays that just put his guys in great spots. And the fact that now he's just had another offseason and ultimately it'll be like 6 months to just practice throwing the football for a while and knowing that he's going to be the guy, I think goes a long way. So I think when I was looking at these, there were three guys who were undervalued and none of the prices are there anymore. So it's, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on them, but there are three guys that, you know, if you're watching Heisman prices adjust throughout the season, then maybe you'll get something similar. But one was Khalil Tate. All these guys were 30 to 35 to 1. The other was Kyle Murray at Oklahoma. He's just a really fast quarterback that if you haven't seen him play, I think he got to play against Kansas when Baker Mayfield was suspended for a quarter. He's ridiculous. They're going to be really, really good again, most likely. So he'll be in the conversation. And then I thought, you know, what we saw from Tua Tagovailoa, however you say his name, I think that was legit what we saw in the college football championship. Alabama with a guy who can make throws like that, plus has a mobile factor. He was a pretty good price. So I have all three of those guys. And at this point, if I had to pick one, I still think Tate's probably the best value at, you know, 14, 15 to one, but he's just going to put up numbers that no one else does. And if Colin's right in the sense where they maybe only lose one game, they get to the Pac-12 title, have a chance to go to the playoff, then like he's absolutely going to be the guy. You know, you still had a guy like Lamar Jackson lose three a couple years ago and win last year. He still got, you know, in the conversation despite four losses. So guys that just have those numbers that are just, you know, better than everyone else. If I think Colin, you're basically hoping that Arizona wins, you know, 9, 10, 11 games. And at that point, he'll at least have a decent shot.
Yeah. And I think Utah, and the thing is Lamar Jackson had that wrapped up by the time we got to November, which I know that whole prop swap, the people a lot know about that prop swap, how you, with the whole Lamar Jackson ticket that, I mean, it was in the bag. It was some of the most free money at that point. And the one spot that I've got circled on this is Arizona going to Utah on a Friday night on October 12th. I think if they can escape that and they can get into this end of October Oregon game undefeated, then you're right. I think Khalil Tate's leading. I mean, his numbers should be just crazy asinine out the door. I mean, taking on, you know, California and taking on Oregon State, and his numbers will be nuts, and we're going to have some real hot tickets on our hands.
All right. Well, we're starting to talk about Arizona spots on a Friday night, so I think this is a good time to wrap this up, considering it's still February. Although by the time you listen to it, it will be March. Thanks for joining us, Preston, and hopefully you can come back again. I hope both of you guys enjoy the Suns Grizzlies game tonight while I'm watching conference tournaments. Thanks everyone for listening, and we'll catch y'all later. Cheers.
Peace out.
With so much drama in the LBC, it's kind of hard being Snoop D-O-double-G. But I, somehow, some way, keep coming up with funky-ass shit like every single day. May I kick a little something for the G's and make a few ends as I breeze through. 2 in the morning and the party still jumping cause my mama ain't home. I got bitches in the living room getting it on, and they ain't leaving till 6 in the morning. So what you wanna do? Shit, I got a pocket full of rubbers and my homeboys do too.